Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Today we are discussing two heartbreaking, beautiful films about life and death in Gaza. Later in the show, we'll discuss the voice of Hind Rajab. First, we're talking about the documentary, Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk. When the Israeli assault started on October 7th, our first guest, the acclaimed Iranian filmmaker, Sepideh Farsi, was traveling around the world presenting her last film, which focuses on a war she personally experienced as a teenager in Iran. As time passed, images of the Palestinian victims became unbearable. She decided to go to Cairo to cross through Rafah, but she couldn't because all of the roads to Gaza were blocked and she was denied access. So she started filming Palestinian refugees who were just arriving from Gaza. Through one of them, she came to know Fatima Hassouna, a 24-year-old Palestinian photojournalist and poet living in northern Gaza with 10 family members living in one room. She was known as Fatim to friends and family. Over the course of a year, from April 2024 to this April, Sepideh Farsi regularly spoke on video calls with Fatim, who lost 13 family members. Sepideh Farsi's new documentary, Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk, is constructed from hours of video calls captured through Fatima's eyes and the experience of a generation of Gazans trapped in an endless cycle of war, starvation, and death. Here is the trailer.
Where are you now? Your position?
Gaza. This is my neighborhood. No one live here. There's no one.
When the war started on October 7th, I started filming Palestinian refugees who were just arriving from Gaza. Through one of them, I came to know Fatim.
I am a photographer.
Yes, I saw your photos.
This is my world. Okay. I find myself in this. I am trying to find some life in this world, in this death. Every second you walk in the street, you put your soul on your hands and walk. I'm shaking. It's very close.
Each of our conversations could be the last one. So every time we connect and I can see her face, it feels like a miracle.
Just like this. Go without any goodbyes.
Meeting her was like a mirror held in front of me. How much both our lives are conditioned by walls and wars.
You look good.
How are you? We live a very simple life, and they want to take this simple life from us. Why?
I don't know if this will end or not. I must keep going, and I must document everything to be me.
That is the trailer for Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk. On April 15th, Sepideh Farsi called Fatim to tell her that the film had been accepted to the Cannes Film Festival, which she hoped they would attend together. The next day at 1 a.m. on April 16th, Fatim and six members of her family were killed in their sleep by an Israeli strike. More than 70,000 Palestinians have been killed since the October 7th attacks, including at least 260 journalists and media workers. At least 28 were women, according to the UN. It is the deadliest conflict for journalists in decades. Before she was killed, Fatim wrote on social media, quote, "If I die, I want a loud death. I don't want to be just breaking news or a number in a group. I want a death that the world will hear, an impact that will remain through time, and a timeless image that cannot be buried by time or place." Joining us to talk about this incredible documentary is Sepida Farsi. Sepida experienced the Iranian Revolution at 13, was imprisoned at 16 as a dissident, and left Iran at 18. She's been in Paris since then. She's made 15 films, documentaries, fiction, and animation, including Tehran Without Authorization. She's working on an Iranian Western film and an animation project inspired by her life called Memoirs of an Undutiful Girl, all while continuing to fight for the restoration of democracy in Iran. Sepida Farsi's latest film is called Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk, and you can watch it on most streaming platforms. Hi, Sepida. Thank you so much for this incredible film. And I am so, so sorry that you lost such a dear friend. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Rose. Yes, and Nina, and I'm happy to be there with you, and thanks for the empathy you have. I was just listening to the trailer and her voice again. I do this every day, basically, in a way, and it just struck me one more time how amazingly prophetic, unfortunately, her words were, you know, when she was talking about documenting the genocide in Gaza and what she really wanted to do and what was important to her. And when she described her losses in the war, the 13 people she lost and her aunts, and she died the same way, you know, it's crazy. And now when I look at the film, of course, I see it with different eyes and I read it differently, but there's still the same energy and the same light that she gave me and she shared with me, which is there as well.
I mean, it's so incredible. And it's, I can't believe that we're still asking this question in 2025 about why Palestinians are not humanized, why it's so rare to see someone like Fatma in our media before she loses her life. You live in Paris. You've traveled all over the world to talk about your films. What strikes you about media coverage specifically of Palestinians living in Gaza, you know, before this assault, during, and now after?
Yes. Well, it's easier, you know, when you consider people as casualties, as numbers, as faceless stories, to pass by the tragedy, pass by the massacres, the atrocities, the genocide, if you do not know whom you're talking about, you know, and you do not feel the same empathy. I can guarantee that each and every time I show the film, I present the film, I'm not there every time because it's going around the world, in many countries, but every time I am present and I see the reactions of people after having watched the film and having met Fatem, it's just, they're all flabbergasted and totally impacted and do not, many of them come back to me. And sometimes I even receive messages from unknown people who find my contact somehow on the net and write to me saying that they do not live the same life, they do not react the same way to the news regarding Gaza. They look at, and I think there is a will to dehumanize them, Palestinians, because then we would accept what's going on there more easily, and we pass by, you know. When you know people, when you have faces on the stories, then you react differently. You want the massacres to stop. You want to do something to stop it. And that's what, unfortunately, I guess, is not wanted, you know. The genocide always starts with the denial of genocide. So this is what I have seen before, during, and after having made this film. You know, this is what made me go after this story. I had the chance to meet Fatem. It could have not happened, of course. Mm. And the disbonding could have been different. It could have been somebody else. We could have not related the same way. It just so happens that we did relate so deeply that when people now watch the film, they really make friends with her. They are friends and they lose her after 2 hours. And that's what really impacts people. And there are so many other people like her, I'm sure.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. What about all of the Fatims that we'll never know about? And I think what was so powerful about your film, Sepida, is just watching you just have chats. April 24th, Fatim talked about her hope and dream is to travel outside of Gaza. She said she would love to go to Tehran. And you told her, oh, wow, that's amazing. And you said, well, I can't go to Tehran because I would be arrested. And she talks about, you know, we cannot get used to the bombing and the killing. We want to get on with our lives. We live simple lives. Why do they want to take that away from us? Why? And so much of what she said was so profound. She said, I'm 24 and I don't have what I want. When you reach what you want, there's a wall. They put a wall in front of you so you can't reach what you're dreaming of. And we would have grabbed more clips, but the problem is the internet connection kept going in and out. And so it was it would have been hard to follow what she said. And so you have the captions on screen.
Yes, that is true. I was lucky enough to over a year, the lapse of time to get so many hours, which could not be all included in the film, obviously, because there had to be a choice made during the editing process. But it's peace would be so easy, you know, it could be reached easily and it would be so much better for everybody, but there are interests, business, money, you know, that are lying elsewhere. And that is why this war and this conflict and this genocide basically is continuing despite the so-called ceasefire, which is not there, you know. It's and I'm so saddened because I think real peace, I mean, but peace means also justice, you know, a responsibility, which is the contrary of the impunity, which we've been observing for the past years and for over a century. Basically, this is an old story. This is the thing also that it shows that, I mean, in a very personal way, I show through our chats with Fatim, through my chats with Fatim, that this is a never-ending story. It's always the same story repeating over and over again for, you know, such a long time. And this is the problem, that Palestinians have been so often dehumanized that it looks like that, it started on October 7th. No, it didn't start on October 7th. We know it, you know. It's just that we kind of tend to forget about it. Even I, who am keen or sensitive, have some knowledge of this, you know, on this chapter of the world history, I still am learning, and I realize how little I know, basically, about this, you know. And I think that by knowing more and by wanting more to reach the peace, it would do a tremendous amount of people good, you know, just not just Palestinians. The world peace would be more preserved, and we would avoid hatred, we would avoid violence, we would avoid, you know, but this is not what the establishment wants. That's the problem. And that's why we're still there.
Today we're speaking with Sepida Farsi about the incredible documentary Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk. It captures the life of 25-year-old photojournalist Fatma Hassana as she lives through the assault on Gaza. What's so incredible about this is that we watch Fatma talk about her neighborhood, which has been turned to rubble. She talks about friends losing family. She talks about losing her own family members, 13, including her grandmother. And, you know, what's so, the timing of this is just so surreal, Sepida, when you think about telling her that the film was selected to be shown at the Cannes Film Festival. And this was after a year. And we'll play that clip in a minute. And then the next day you find out that she and her family were killed. Can you, how did you find out? Because we see you calling her and I can see your face and you're nervous thinking, is she going to answer? Is she still alive? And you're both so excited when she answers and your faces both light up.
Yes. It was like that every time we were together, we were facing each other. There was so much joy simply because, you know, we were so keen in spending that time and sharing things together with each other. But yes, that, and I was in that, within those 24 hours between the moment I got the confirmation that the film was selected, and I wanted to tell her face to face. And which I did, and I was filming it. I wanted to film her face, you know, when she learned that. And the following day, when the targeted attack happened, and when I learned it on, basically this was like Monday 15th, in the morning I learned the news, I tell her in the afternoon, and on Tuesday we're supposed to talk, but she cannot connect, so we keep sending messages, text messages, And at some point it's too late to connect because I know by experience that late afternoon Gaza time, the connection is cut by Israel. So there is no viable connection for a video call. So I know on Tuesday 16th that day is gone. And I think, okay, on Wednesday morning, then she will be able to connect and we'll plan. And during all those hours, what I'm thinking is how to get her out. I've already applied for the visa. I have her passport, and I'm thinking, what if she comes and then she cannot go back? Because she tells me, I come on one condition, that I go back afterwards. And I'm like, what a responsibility, and how will I be? But how would I have imagined that she would be killed with all her family? I was just thinking, if she would be with me and I wouldn't be able to send her back to her family, or something would happen to her family, then how would I carry that responsibility? And you know, and I was also fearing for her. I mean, everything was like in my head. And then on Wednesday morning, I'm working on the film again, trying to finish, you know, there were subtitles, things to be done. And all of a sudden there's her photo, which pops up on my phone, sent by a colleague of mine who had seen the news before me. And I don't believe it, of course. I'm in denial. I try calling her and I just don't believe it. I keep thinking, no, that's a mistake. And it takes me a couple of hours to get a confirmation by our common friend. And I don't know what to say. I mean, it's just, I still can't believe it. Mm. I know it's true, but I can't believe it.
Mm. And that's the thing that so many Palestinians in Gaza have talked about, wanting to leave Gaza, but wanting to go back. We go somewhere to visit and we want to return.
Absolutely.
But in many cases, and I'm curious, are Gazans who've left going to be able to return? Here's a headline from the New York Times 2 weeks ago. Mm. Israel says a Gaza border will reopen, but only for Palestinians to leave.
That's exactly what they know. And that's why they do not want to leave. Many of them have been. I mean, they're exhausted. They're desperate. They are, you know, you see the images. I mean, after the war, starvation, genocide, bombs, everything, there are floods now. There's, you know, I mean, it's like apocalyptic. The images are amazingly, I mean, horrible. But despite that, many of them do not want to leave because they know exactly what you said, that if they do leave, they will not be able to go back. None of the ones whom I met in Cairo when I was there who had left Gaza have been able to go back because it is always a one-way exit, you know, with money, actually. You know, they pay a lot of money to get out also. Those who choose to get out or who need to get out, when it was possible last year, they would pay something like, it sounds weird, no? For people who have nothing, like $8,000 or $10,000 they would pay per person to leave Gaza with no visa, no nothing, just like on foot with a backpack. I mean, it is The conditions are so surreal that when you do talk about them in detail, people are usually like totally taken aback. Like they can't believe that it's that way. You know, when you buy drinking water, when you buy a cigarette, like $50, you know, when you, and this was the good days. Now it's even worse. This war is a very lucrative business. You know, it brings a lot of money to some people. And that's also why it's continuing. I'm repeating myself. But I think, unfortunately, and you know that Gazans are the descendants of people who were expelled from elsewhere in Palestine. Already most of the Gazans are Palestinians who've been evacuated, you know, generations before from other parts of the occupied Palestine. And so they do know this in their, they have it in their DNA that if they leave, they'll never be able to go back. And so this is a crucial choice, yes. And that's why they don't want to leave.
We are speaking with Iranian filmmaker Sepida Farsi about her new documentary, Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk. It is constructed from hours of video calls captured through Fatma's eyes and the experience of a generation of Gazans trapped in an endless cycle of war, starvation, and death. Fatem is a 24-year-old Palestinian journalist and poet who lived in northern Gaza with 10 family members living in one room. We're going to play a clip from the documentary Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk, and this is the last conversation between Sepida and Fatma on April 15th of this year.
I can't believe this. Wow. Let me see you.
I can't.
I know you. It's since 1 year.
I wanted to tell you. Yes, yes, yes. So you're sitting, right?
Yes.
No, the film has been selected for a big festival. Yes. In Cannes. I don't know if you know Cannes. Do you know Cannes Film Festival? Cannes is a very big festival.
Yes, I know. Yeah. I know it.
It has been selected for Cannes.
Oh.
Yes.
That's so great.
Yes. You want to come?
Of course.
So, because I...
And if I can, yeah. Tom and Emmy and Matan, yes, it will be perfect. It's so amazing.
Yes, it is. It is. Well, I feel concerned now that the film will be public. I mean, I was thinking whether you would stay still there or will you move from your place to somewhere else? I mean, I don't know. How you feel about that?
I think I'm gonna get out from Gaza because even if everything or everywhere is destroyed, but I cannot get out from here because here is my family, my memories, my things, my friends, my everything. We have just Gaza. We have any land. We haven't any land except Gaza. So this is our land. This is where we live and where we born. We can rebuild Gaza and rebuild our homes and our places. I don't know when, but I believe that everything will end.
It's nice talking to you again.
Me too.
Yeah.
So, I miss you so much.
You come for the festival.
I hope so. I really hope.
Yes, yes. So you sent me your passport now? You just sent it to me?
Yeah.
Okay.
I sent.
We talk soon, huh?
Hello. Bye.
The next day at 1 a.m. on April 16th, Fatem and six members of her family were killed in their sleep by an Israeli airstrike. Their names were Wala, Ala, Yazan, Mohammed, Mohanid, and Raid Hassuna. Sepida, I can't even imagine what this experience is like for you. And she had so much joy in her face. Every reviewer talks about that. Her smile is amazing. And to hear her say to you, I miss you so much. I mean, she's the same age as your daughter.
Yes, she was. And yeah, I just met on that day. I met her sister Ala for the first time. I mean, like in video, and she was 5 months pregnant, you know. And I met, of course, her brothers, the father, the mother. The mother is the only survivor, you know, survivor of that attack. But yeah, Yazan was 10 only, you know. I mean, I knew all the family, and it was such a, I mean, a feeling of, this is the first time in my life that it happened to me, working on a subject like that, where I was so far physically and yet emotionally so close, you know, to those people and to her especially. And I still feel the same.
It was so striking when you met her 20-year-old brother, Mohamed. It was the first time he's seen a woman outside of Gaza. He was so shy, and what a great-looking guy. But he wanted to see you. And then you met her dad, and he gave you a peace sign and immediately said, when will this war end?
Yes. And I met, and I met her friends. I met those little two kids. They're older now. They're 1 year older. They're thinner because there's no food to eat, you know. So, but I get some photos of them, Sahar and Hussam, you know. And the worst part of it is that you don't know what to do, how to help them.
Right.
You know, this was the feeling I had during that year. And it's still the same feeling that I can only send messages, perhaps some money, but I mean, nothing more, you know, I can't get them out. I tried so hard to get some of them out. Those who asked me, who needed, because they were sick or, you know, needed treatment or for some reasons, none of them, I could get none of them out, despite all that I did. And it's such a frustrating feeling that it seems that the world can function. We can do many things, you know, we can do wonders. And when it comes to Palestinians, all the doors close. And it's so unfair.
Well, Sepita, thank you so much for this incredible documentary and for elevating the voices of Fatma and her family. And we would love to have you back to have a longer conversation about this film, about the reaction that you're receiving in the new year. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Let me just say one last thing very briefly. I'm traveling around the world, and this is the amazing thing about Fatma. That's how I called her, Fatma Hassona. She's been in touch with so many people. I met somebody in Japan. I met someone in New York, someone in Germany, to whom she had sent photos, to whom she'd sent poetry, different, you know, and this is the amazing thing. I think resilience is too light to describe what she was doing and what many Palestinians in Gaza are doing. It's like they're burning, you know, like meteors to give that light to the people outside in the rest of the world, to show how great of people they are. And I wish we would be more, you know, acknowledging this more strongly.
Yes. And you, I should say that a number of her photographs are in the film. And if you want to see her incredible photographs, they were also published in major media outlets. I mean, she was an accomplished photographer.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Sepita. And thank you for your
work.
We'd love to have you back.
Thank you. Yeah, I will be back. With pleasure. Thanks.
Thank you. Sepita Farsi is an Iranian filmmaker. We've been talking about the beautiful, heartbreaking documentary, Put Your Soul on Your Hand and Walk. And you can watch it on most streaming platforms. Coming up after a break, we will talk about another film, The Voice of Hind Rajab, which recreates an emergency call with a 5-year-old girl trapped in a car under Israeli fire as first responders desperately try to save her. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this.